Welcome to your concluding episode of Business Watch for 2021. Can you believe it? Well, I think it's worth recalling that on Thursday, the 5th of March 2020, which was 652 days ago, the National Institute for Communicable Diseases confirmed that a suspected case of COVID-19 had tested positive in South Africa. And it feels like this news report took place years ago, and that COVID-19 has been with the world for much, much longer than it has. Now, some 21 months into the pandemic, 251 million confirmed cases of COVID-19, 5 million deaths and counting, and 7.1 billion vaccine doses later on a global scale, many parts of the world remain in limbo and struggling to recover. Well, it's time to consider the new reality that is emerging in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic and ask what it means for politics, economics, and business into the new year. Let's welcome our panelists for this final episode. Warwick Lucas, head of Galileo Securities, Raymond Parsons, professor in the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Isa Mplanga, chief economist at Alex Forbes. Raymond, kick us off. Let's start at the global level. The IMF is likely to lower its global economic growth estimates due to the Omicron variant. That was according to the leader of the IMF at a Reuters Next conference last week. What is your assessment of the state of the global economy and what awaits the global economy into 2022?
Well, Michael, you're asking us to look into the crystal ball. Once again, here's mine. It's had a stressful year. It's looking very cloudy and cracked, but it's the best one I've got. We'll have to use it today. But I have sent an email to Father Christmas asking him to send me a brand new one that hopefully in the new year will be clearer about what's going to happen next year.
Well, let's hope it's not snarled up in a supply chain issue there and it does actually get
to you. Well, I think I'm going to say it needs to get fast tracking because clearly where I need clarity now is quite urgent. So I'm going to ask him to expedite it. But more seriously, you have referred to the London Economist. They had a leader last week on this very issue about how they saw the dangers ahead for the world economy next year. With the Omicron threat, they saw it very much as having an impact on world growth and indeed on world inflation. So those were the two major economic danger signals they saw. And they saw it for a number of reasons, because there are going to be tighter restrictions in some leading economies where people have found, as we found with some of the travel bans, they're easier to impose, they're much harder to remove, and they take much longer. Then you've referred to the supply chains. There are going to be further disruptions there, which will aggravate costs. There's the slowdown in the world economy, which might be driven by the slowdown in the Chinese economy. I'm not sure that's received enough attention.
Yep.
But in the London Economist, that point is emphasized, whether there will or will not be a soft landing in the Chinese economies. And then later on, we'll talk about what might happen as far as interest rates in the United States are concerned. Now, is this all doom and gloom? No, because as always, it depends on what the policy responses are, how well these economies are managed into 22. We know a lot more, we hopefully know a lot more about handling the economic consequences of a pandemic globally and hopefully also nationally. So the important point now will be how serious these dangers will be as outlined by the London Economist will very much depend on how we manage the uncertainties, which are clearly on our radar screen, which are on the dashboard, and which will have implications for some, you know, for some economies more than others. But we certainly in South Africa will have to be alert to how do we keep our house in order to manage whatever might emerge in the global economy next year.
Thanks, Raymond. That's a nice broad sweep of the big issues that we're going to be confronted with next year. And Isa, I know economists like to say on the one hand and on the other. So I'm going to ask you to put both of your hands firmly in your pockets here. Which way do you see it going for the global economy next year, considering all of these risks that Raymond has outlined?
Look, I think I agree with Prof. Parson. We have about four major issues that we're going to face. And all of them, they have turned from tailwinds to headwinds for the global economy. China has been a major driver of the global economy. Now that it's slowing, it will have to be a drag on global growth going forward. Secondly, central banks have cushioned the extent of the contraction since COVID and actually helped the economic recovery with free cash transfers to households. The threat of inflation, which has reached multi-decade highs in many countries, in advanced economies, the US in particular, but also in emerging markets where it's starting to show up, will result in central banks tightening policy. And in fact, they might be behind the curve, which means they will be tempted to fast-track and increase interest rate on an aggressive level. That may actually result in a recession 2023-2024. So that's the other major issue. Fiscal policy have really helped businesses stay afloat. And that is also going to be withdrawn, which means we are likely to see, you know, bankruptcies increase going forward. So all of these things, they point to a very difficult 2022 relative to where we are currently in 2021. And that is not a positive environment. We just have to deal with them in how policy respond. We might actually see a reversal of the intentions of both monetary policy authorities and fiscal authorities in the second half of the year.
Wow, that is a sobering prospect indeed, Isa, that you're painting. And Warwick, I was going to say, if you made it through 2021 alive, and if you're an entrepreneur with your business still standing and in one piece and maybe able to pay a few bonuses at the end of the year, you've done well. It doesn't sound like it's going to be quite as easy next year. And it was a brutal year this year. But I want to zoom in on the big issue, obviously, with the Fed meeting later today. The last big issue for market participants this week is we've got full trading desks at the moment. And which way the Fed's going to go here to manage, obviously, this fear of runaway inflation on the one hand, but also the equity markets that have become so used to the Fed put.
Yes, Michael, I think if we contextualize this, I mean, how come has inflation become so passé in the last years? And I think the answer has got several points, and that is that, first of all, we've had natural deflationary sources from a combination of technology leading to advancements in manufacturing, in information management and so on, that's clearly led to productivity gains. We've had high savings rates in many parts of the world. And then we've had aging populations, which, of course, have been the source of those high savings rates. And as offsetting that, I mean, in the COVID wave, we had astonishing amounts of both fiscal and monetary expansion. Now, to take all of this back into the question of how is the Fed going to manage it, I think to some degree, very, very slowly. Clearly, they're going to need to include some very good communication and projection of what they anticipate doing. And the reason is, perhaps in the same way that one would rather use a threat of force than the actual use of force, is to try and get the actual expectation of rate hikes to do some of the work for them. So by talking about tapering and saying we'll do it by such and such a date, namely June next year or whatever, basically creates the anticipation that indeed these events will arise and will arrive, and therefore, particularly if you're dancing brave already, you need to actually get your house in order. So that does some of the work. But the fact of the matter is that the Fed is going to have to lean in here. But as I said right at the beginning, there's lots of forces there for deflation. It's going to actually be quite interesting to see how the scales come to balance. Mm-hmm. And they certainly will have to by the end of 2022.
Now, what I'm hearing is potentially death by dot plot to try and rein in inflation. Show it as many times as you can to the market before you actually do it. And I mean, Raymond, I think the dilemma facing policymakers at the moment is how much of a blunt instrument can, such as interest rates, can be used against forces like supply chain bottlenecks, and you risk by raising interest rates choking off any threat of growth that you would have been getting just as soon as the supply chain bottlenecks are sorted out. And that might prove to be the big trick here or art to getting this exactly right, because one doesn't know how much of this inflation is actually being driven by this quicker than expected recovery from the pandemic.
Well, yes, Michael, I'm glad you've used the word dilemma, because that is indeed what we're facing in some countries globally and what we're also facing in South Africa. And the important point now is to understand that in these abnormal circumstances, monetary policy is not just a technocratic solution, i.e. page one of the textbook says that's what we do. No, we look out of the window of the central bank and say what is happening beyond what the models are telling us, perhaps not correctly. So good judgment is very important for successful monetary policy from now on, because there are whirlpools on both sides, not on one side only. And I heard someone earlier talk about a recession. I think there's a greater risk that if we don't manage monetary policy and other policies correctly, you will get stagflation, which is the worst of all worlds. And that's what we want to avoid. So what does a recent survey, also from the London Economist, show us? They did a survey of 40 emerging economies on an index of vulnerability to what might happen in US monetary policy. Where did South Africa feature? We featured about in the middle with our vulnerabilities. A common factor in all of them, from number one to number 40, was, of course, their degree of dependence on the Chinese economy. So let's not lose sight of that. So I think, once again, to come back to the implicit message in what we've said so far, as we unpack the global economy, it has important messages for domestic policy and the ability of a country to keep its house in order in such a way that it has the shock absorbers to deal with whatever further bad news might emerge.
Well, let's talk then about the Chinese economy, Isa, because next year Beijing is going to be dominated by the 20th Party Congress, which is this very tightly controlled Chinese Communist Party display of power. We already see Xi consolidating his grip on power in China. There's been the crackdown and regulation all throughout the year on various sectors in the Chinese economy. And then ending the year with the Chinese property bubble precariously poised and so far hasn't burst. Surely that seems to be one of the big risks for an open exporting emerging market like South Africa with our reliance on commodities into the new year.
Absolutely. I think here we just have to concede that the Chinese economy is a policy-driven economy. It's not a free market economy. And if you look what has been happening in the property sector, it's likely to be well-controlled. We have also seen the Chinese Central Bank cut the reserve requirement, and it's likely to continue to do so next year as the Chinese Communist Party is going to have its conference to try and shore up the economy. But also on the energy front, they are expected to shut down some of their coal-fired plants in an effort to help the transition to a green economy. And that would have negative consequences for commodities that has helped South Africa to recover quite significantly from a growth perspective, but also from a fiscal perspective. Now, if we consider all those combined, what it shows is we are likely to end up with a moderate Chinese economic growth, less than 6% that we have been used to over the last decade. And that will have major consequences for the global economy. Because let's take it, the Chinese economy is the second largest economy in the world. When it grows, the global economy also grows. So when it slows down, the global economy will also slows down, which means many of the smaller economies, such as South Africa, that tend to be lifted by the performance of the global economy, will be dragged lower. Mm. And that is where domestic policy should play a bigger role to offset the global negative developments that will be coming out of China.
Well, they always used to say when the US sneezed, the rest of the world would catch a cold. When China discovers a new virus, the rest of the world gets a global pandemic. And 2 years later, here we are, Warwick, with the pandemic still factored into all of this? And we've been speaking about risks, inflation, a slowing Chinese economy. Gina Schumann of Citi this week said she expects China to potentially grow below 5%. And I mean, it's never shown such tepid growth since the statistics, taken with a pinch of salt as they are out of Beijing, have been published. So this seems to be a very real threat. Is there anything to counter that? Maybe in the commodities sector for South Africa, the green metals that are going to be so important in this renewable build-out and this new green infrastructure build-out that is going to dominate the world over the next few years?
Well, Michael, I mean, it obviously investment in green technologies is potentially stimulatory, but of course you have a substitution effect, and culling out your old parts of the economy does come at a price. There's nothing free in terms of this transition. And I mean, we can sort of see it locally as well. I mean, the carbon economy in South Africa is very, very big, and it would take a substantial amount of investment, time and effort in order to transition it. But talking about China, I think, look, for a long time, a big chunk of China's growth was basically driven by the shape of its dependency curve, i.e. the number of working population versus the entire population. That actually peaked in about 2012, and it's been steadily drifting lower now, and is going to continue to drift lower for the next 20-odd years. And all of that basically from being a wind that steadily drove the Chinese ship forward at 10% plus at one particular time. I mean, now it's still positive in that workforce has growing experience and productivity, but the actual change in that dependency ratio means that China will grow a lot more slowly. Mm. I would guess at the end of the next decade, we'd see China's growth probably down to an average about 3.5 to 4%. I mean, it is part of the trend. If we see China with a 5% year sometime in the next couple of years, it's actually not really a surprise. It's on track. And bear in mind, of course, the Chinese economy is much bigger than it was 10 years ago. So that 5% of China's growth in the world context is a lot bigger than 10% was, say, 15 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And statistics, well, they like bikinis, sometimes more important for what they conceal than what they reveal, and important to understand that in that context. India is emerging. We've also got Africa emerging potentially as those new growth drivers here, if we take the right policy choices. But Raymond, in the last third of this conversation, I want to zoom into what's happening locally and at home. We've got the Zondo Commission with Justice Raymond Zondo due to deliver his report finally on the 1st of January. So there's a nice little New Year's present for South Africa. How do you expect this to shape politics in 2022, given what we're seeing and this contestation still between the RET faction of the ANC and the President's faction?
Well, Michael, I think as we've often discussed in these programs over the year, apart from getting your economic policy right and above all implementing what you have said you are going to do, there are these fundamental issues of governance which feed into the way our economy is run and whether you're maximizing the way you ought to be using your resources. So the Zondo Commission, having worked for 3 years, there are high expectations of it. And it has revealed, of course, where things have gone wrong with state capture, with corruption, misgovernance, which has had a high economic cost for our economic performance. I would hope that when we see the report, I'm hoping it will be published, of course, at the same time when it is handed over, is firstly to identify who have been the culprits, who have to be further investigated, to strengthen the parliamentary oversight over certain corrupt activities in certain government departments. We want to overhaul the procurement process of government. It's really got to be tightened up, made much cleaner, much more disciplined. We want to see more protection for the whistleblowers. I think that's another important dimension we'll be looking for in the Zondo Commission. And then finally, it must express a view on the cadre deployment issue, which has clearly played a very important part in state corruption and corruption under the state capture process. So what I would just say, the bottom line I'd be looking for, bearing in mind that these are only recommendations. So whatever impact they make, however positive they may be, the real test next will be how rapidly will we implement them and where will be the political leadership, because it's not just a technical issue. It's going to have to be not only managed from a capacity and a leadership point of view, it's also got to be politically managed so that you get the best out of it and that you can come out to the country next year and say, we're going to have cleaner, better government, which will also help our economic prospects. And I think that's the most important test that must emerge from once we've read the, what Zondo is going to tell the president and the country in the new year.
Well, I think it's always worthwhile following the money there. If you look at the political will, and with the resignation of Hermione Cronier, citing capacity issues, lack of funding, resources, support, we just haven't seen the same commitment in resources to the rhetoric, the flowery promises about cleaning up government and the state. And that really has to change if we're going to start to see any kind of improvement in investor and business confidence in this economy. We've got 5 minutes to go, so I want to go around the table. Isa, maybe we can just kick off with you. The president invoked our national flower, the Protea, I think it was, during this year's State of the Nation address. Because it's quite hardy and often tends to do quite well after being decimated through fire. I don't know what it's looking like at the moment. If you just have to look at our rail system, you know, 1,000 kilometres of Transnet rail stolen. The country is almost being stolen still beyond the state capture years before our very eyes. What would you like to hear and see from the president at next year's State of the Nation address?
Look, I would like to hear a lot. But if I choose a few that are quite crucial, is a solution to our energy crisis that we continue to have, and Eskom is reported to be saying we might end up with stage 8 load shedding at some point in time. That would be devastating to the economy, to jobs, and to, you know, social security in general in the country. The second issue that I would want to hear is, you know, some of the reforms that we have been talking about, we need to see actual implementation. You know, one of them will be, you know, safety and security and the protection of all the infrastructure that we have, seeing the theft, the vandalism that we have seen in our railway lines that have been reported to almost likely to go extinct if nothing is done quickly enough. We need to demonstrate the ability to protect the current infrastructure for us to say we put infrastructure at the center of driving the economic recovery. If we fail to demonstrate that, it becomes difficult for us to convince the private sector to invest in this infrastructure, because their return on investment is unlikely to be achieved. So I will just stop there and say we need to see these reforms being implemented. And not just talk, we need to see action.
Warwick, 89% of Prasa's railways are out of order in Gauteng. 70% in KZN don't work. I mean, it's just the basics, isn't it? What would you like to hear from the president?
Michael, I think what I'd like to see is, and the other guys touched on this when they spoke of the need for implementation, and it is quite simply that when we came to the end of 2019, we already had a country that was, in socio-economic terms, in a very concerning place already. Public finances that were troubled, restless population, a problem of corruption that needed some rooting out. And COVID has been a process of, quite apart from a humanitarian disaster, a massive distraction process as well, that seriously got South Africa away from a program of urgent reform. We need to find that urgency back again. We have a zero prevalence of north of 70% in the population in terms of COVID.
Yeah.
It pretty much means that most of us have had it, have some kind of resilience. Those who wish to be vaccinated have been vaccinated. I think we need to actually make the mental adjustment to turn away from COVID as a residual crisis and actually look at our entire environment and go now to implement what we actually would have wanted to implement in 2020. So things like the revised economic programs that Tito and Boweni flagged well back then need to actually now start coming to the fore. We've seen our new Minister of Finance indicating his acceptance of them. Let's go to implementation and get it done.
Let's wake up Rudy Dix and we'll get him on the show first thing in the new year. Raymond, what would you like to hear from the President?
Well, I don't think I can add much to the perceptive comments of my colleagues, but to say that to me, what we've been saying on this panel for most of the year, what one would like to see reflected in the State of the Nation address, in the budget, and in that big investment conference, which now assumes much more strategic importance in March than it did earlier. If I may paraphrase Shakespeare, with apologies to my friend Hamlet, to say that everything must feed into the following for South Africa next year: to grow or not to grow. That is the question. Whether it is nobler to suffer the slings and arrows of outraged investors or take arms against a sea of economic troubles and by opposing, end them. That should be our mantra for next year.
And I might also close with some Dickens to say it was the best of times and the worst of times, as a tale of two countries still is one of our major issues with the rising inequality. Well, anyway, that was Raymond Parsons, joined by Warwick Lucas of Galileo Securities and Isam Tlanga, Chief Economist at Alex Forbes, with your final episode of Business Watch for 2021. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you all have a COVID-free Christmas. And if you're traveling, do so safely. I'll see you in the Year of the Tiger. Cheers for now.